Fine. Please record me.
Okay, the floor is yours. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I'm going to start my timer.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and if somebody realizes that I go long, just give me a thumbs up and I'll close it up. Hi, my name is Gretchen. I am an addict and an alcoholic and a chaos creator, controller, fixer, obsessor. I just wanted to say a little prayer first. This is just like an affirmation. And I just wanted to share it with you and say it for all of us, right? My creator, soul you have placed in us is pure. It's pure. The soul you have placed in us is pure. Lord, please help me say something useful to my friends here in this meeting today. I am the child of an alcoholic stepfather and an untreated alanomic for many years of my upbringing. She got sobriety the last 10 years of her life. She died very young from what she believed was from not speaking her truth. So, I'm speaking today about the second step. If those of you that didn't know, I'm talking about the second step, which is a very important step to me. The Big Book Awakening meetings that I go to, a lot of times we hear about 10, 11, and 12. We hear about 4 and 5. We might hear a lot about the first step. But for me, staying fluid on these first three steps is really important. And I can see how the first step, the second step, and the third step play out in my life on the day-to-day basis, right? So how I was raised was I was the middle child. Between two stepchildren, my mother's stepchildren, and I was the peacemaker. I was willing to go to any lengths in an alcoholic home to make peace. I would do what you wanted me to do. I would say what you wanted me to say. I would show up in ways that was important. I got clean when I did. My day only been sober for maybe about 9 months before COVID started and all the meetings shut down. So by a wonderful series of events, synchronicity, you wouldn't believe God shows up for us and works with our capacity. Synchronicity happened, and I have a fitness trainer who said, you know what? You should call my aunt. She's been in AA forever. You should call my aunt. You should call my aunt. You should call my aunt. Three times she said it to me. So when things happen in threes for me, I always kind of like jump up and take notes. I'm like, all right, threes. Okay. So I called Aunt Sylvia and she took me straight to the bedevilments, right? And diagnosed my spiritual malady in a second. And it was like a clear, white understanding. I understood for the first time, even being in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I felt the whole time that I was working the steps like, there has to be another way. Maybe I need to go back and start again. Maybe I should. I was really questioning the process. And I think that was almost a prayer. It wasn't actually a prayer, but it was actually a prayer for me that I find a different and better way. And Sylvia had a sponsee who was doing a workshop just at the right time that I needed a workshop. I came into Big Book Awakening meetings and I thought, oh my gosh, I got to fix it all, right? Which is our way, right? As chaos creators, it's like, no, I can't just fix the thing that's going to kill me. I got to fix it all right now. In fact, yesterday, and it has to be done perfectly. And I got to stick the landing, arms in the air, just like a gymnast, Olympic style, right? But fortunately, through good sponsorship in this program, God-reliant sponsorship that encouraged my God-reliance, I was able to see that we work things one at a time, right? So I started with drugs and alcohol, went through the 12 steps of BBA that way. And then the very next year, I went through for Chaos Creator, Controller, Fixer. And what I realized in that process was this is what my problem is. And that alcohol and drugs and other addictions, food, I mean, I could go on and on, you know, we all know, were really symptoms of the spiritual malady. And my and my addiction to my thoughts and thinking. That's really what it was. So the second step is super important to me because I feel like I'm always in the process of coming to believe, right? And the second step reads, and we read them today, which is really helpful, right? We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I'm kind of one of those people, I like to work the edges of things. Like, what does it mean to come to believe? So I felt like for me, coming to believe was like a faith walk, right? It was a faith walk. It didn't happen in the moment. It's not happening in the moment. That it is an extended journey. For me, it's an extended journey. And it's a gradual letting go, unlearning, and handing over. And that has to happen all the time. I have to stay fluid in my second step, even though I made a third step promise. And I wholeheartedly and heartfelt promise that God be my principal and I be his agent. But I take that control back all the time. So I see, and when I came into the rooms, I thought, well, I took the second step. I'm supposed to have, that's done. I'm supposed to check the box. But over time, what I'm learning is that this is a gradual faith walk. And coming to believe for me was a process, right? I kind of showed up first desperate. I was like, fine, I'll believe whatever you want me to believe. I will believe it. Yes, you say believe in God, done. As long as I can get myself out of this scrape that I'm in with drugs and alcohol. And then it kind of came to reasons like, well, you know, after that initial like desperation, you get some recovery, you start feeling better, you start working steps, you do this thing. Then it came to a believing out of reason. It's like, well, I don't know that God will show up for me, but I see that God's showing up for you. I see that God is, there's recovery in this room. There's recovery in that person. So I could reason. I could believe by reasoning. But like we know, like the book says, is that reasoning only takes us so far, right? That to get to the shore requires more, and that more is believing out of intuition, right? Something that's transpersonal, that has nothing to do with me, but a clear insight, a clear knowing. And those things have happened. There's a precious man that comes to the noon meeting, and this was a blinding flash of the obvious, just as an example of the of that intuition. He was saying that for him, that spiritual experiences were happening all the time. And I had this expectation, right? It's all or nothing thinking with us. It's like all or nothing. I'm all in or I'm all out, and I can't stay because I don't have the will sufficient to keep me there, right? Whatever it is that I maybe say I'm doing. But what he said was spiritual experiences were happening to him all the time. And in that blinding flash of the obvious, I was able during the day and weeks, up until now, to see how spiritual experience is happening to me every day. God removes obstacles and God puts obstacles in my path so I can go to him and ask for help with those obstacles. Right. And I thought that when I prayed for a removal of fear, that it needed to happen now, all or nothing thinking, and that it wasn't working because I was still afraid. Right. But I see now, I'm coming to believe through this meaning making machine that spiritual experiences are happening to me all the time. And I shouldn't discount this intuition that spiritual experiences are happening to me all the time. And when we think about the word, right, sanity, I know what insanity is. I like to work with opposites sometimes. And I know that, I know what sanity is. Well, let me rewind. I know what insanity is, right? So I looked up a definition of insanity, and I'm going to read it to you now, right? So sanity is acting in accord with reality, and reality is what is happening in, with, around you right now. This present moment, right? We've talked about it. People have said it to us. Our sponsors have told us God is in the moment, right? And when I'm in the moment, when I'm in the present, then there is nothing to change, fix, heal, or debate. I'm in the moment, in the present moment. And that's where intuition lives. It's in the moment with me and my ability to be present with this moment, knowing that my version of insanity is living in the past. That's insanity. I was clear about what insanity was. It was me and I was living in the past, or I was projecting to the future. It went either way. But sanity for me is living in the present. And golly, that's hard. That's hard. But this coming to believe turns into a faith walk. And we've heard in these rooms that faith is a result of results, right? So I see in you that God's working. I see through spiritual experiences, small and large in me, that God is working. Then I'm coming to believe that the power within myself could restore me to sanity. And sanity being living in the present moment where there is nothing to change, heal, fix. That to me is freedom. That's freedom, especially for a chaos creator, perfectionist like I am. Because I, like I said, nothing was off the table. I would do whatever it could, I had to do to avoid conflict. And when I came into the room, the rooms for sure. And when I came in for drugs and alcohol into Narcotics Anonymous, I was certainly this way. I was opinionated. I was close-hearted and I was defensive and defended in my body. And what I noticed is that this hard line, when I pulled alcohol and drugs away, I thought that that would take care of it. But that hard line, that opinionated, that close-heartedness, that defensiveness was still with me. And that's when I came to that page 52 and she read to me what my spiritual malady was. And then I set about the work of how can I move past what I think I know, right? We have a set-aside prayer. Help me set aside everything I think I know. I add to that. I say, help me smash and abandon everything I think I know. Words that come from the big book, right? Smash and abandon everything I think I know for an open heart, an open mind, and a new experience of myself, of you, of the 12 steps, of God and his process in my life, of God and his process in you, right? Because we're all on our own path. One of the things that my big book awakening sponsor told me is she said, honey, you're special, but you're not special, right? And so, you know, we can take it in a way, it's like, I'm not special, what? But no, what she meant was, I'm not special in that we all suffer from the same spiritual malady. And I am special because I am a child of God, that I have a God in my life. I took that third step. I made that promise in the third step. And a lot of times I have to kind of re-up that promise, don't we? Sometimes daily, sometimes in the moment, I have to recommit myself to that promise that God could and were if he were sought. And I think, let's go to the book, right? Everybody has a book. My sponsor says, don't talk on about yourself, talk about the book. And so let's go to the book, okay? So if we're in, I like to read Bill's story of chapter of Bill's second step, and that's on page 12, all right? And Bill says, you know, remember he's with his friend and his friend, can you imagine? He's just sitting there yammering on, well, yeah, but Bill's yeah, but, and then yeah, but, and yeah, but, and yeah, but, and yeah, but. And finally, he just gets, and he's like, okay, you know what? Why don't you choose your own conception of God? And when I read that in the book, I visibly relax. To me, it takes me off the hook. I was raised by a Buddhist, by a Christian scientist, and an evangelical Christian. And I went to Seventh-day Adventist school, right? So it sounds like the makings of a joke, right? And they all go into a bar or something. But I was raised, so I didn't really think that I had a problem with God. I was totally agnostic. And when I read about agnosticism, I could definitely diagnose myself as such. But I felt like I had no beef with God, but the God that I had coming into this program was from other people. And when I read that line in italics, it said, why don't you, Gretchen, choose your conception of me? You choose it through this weird meaning maker that I have, but I was able to choose a God that was loving and caring and my own conception. And that gave me so much hope that maybe this could work for me. And just like Bill says here, that statement hit me hard. It got me too, Bill. It hit me real hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered for many years. Right? It tells you to go and underline things that you relate to. That was one that I related to. I was so isolated. I was so alone. I had never felt more lonely in a house full of people that loved me, in a job where people loved me, that this really meant this mattered to me. So I stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing. What do I have to be? To be willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required to make my beginning, right? That's nothing more was required other than this mustard seed. It was only a mustard seed of willing to believe that brought me to a place where I could start to figure out what it means to live in the present, start to realize, I see it. Yeah, I'm almost done. I just want to, oh, somebody's giving me a little thumbs up over there. I'm sorry. I was worried I was going too long. But it's what this second step does for me and continues to do for me is it defines sanity. So I can come back to the moment through our prayer and meditation that we're at. I mean, and still I'm trying to figure out, what is a practice around 10 and 11 that works for me with regards to coming to like God restoring me to sanity, right? It's this all a faith walk. It's all an open-ended trust walk, gradual letting go, unlearning, and handing over. And it has to happen day to day and moment to moment. So, you know, Bill sees here, if we go back to the book, I saw that growth could start from that point upon a foundation of complete what? Willingness, right? And that's a moving target too. Some days I'm more willing than others. I might build upon what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. I didn't really know how to get it. I'm still in the process of figuring out how to get it and how to let go and let go and let go and let God. You know those terms that we hear? I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. And I knew that I wanted him enough. And I'm continuing to want God enough, right? And here comes my favorite part. At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed, right? Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes, right? How did I come in? I came in opinionated. I came in full of pride and prejudice. I came in closed-hearted, which is pride and prejudice. I came in defensive and defended bodily, and that's pride and prejudice. So the prayer that I have now, and it's part of like our third step prayer that we did earlier, God, relieve me of the bondage of self, relieve me of my pride and prejudice so that I may better do thy will. Right? Take away my difficulty. What are my difficulties? Pride and prejudice. so that I could bear witness to those I could help, right? Ah, of thy power, thy love. Way of life. Such a beautiful prayer. And I just wanted to skip ahead to page 13 at the bottom, and then I'm going to shut it. Okay. I'm going to be quiet. My at the bottom of the page on page 13, my friend promised when these things were done, I would enter a new relationship with my creator. Right? What are these things that I sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and think to meet my problems as God would have me? Never was I to pray for myself except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. And I can tell you that working with others has given me in great measure. Firstly, it's been a mirror, and secondly, it has been my blessing. But this is the last thing I'll say. She's wordy. So my friend promised when these things were done, I would enter into a new relationship with my creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living that answered all my problems. What is that way of living? Belief in the power of God. That's the first thing on the list, right? Second thing, plus enough willingness. What? Honesty. Andy mentioned that, right? It's the program of honesty. And we have to peel back the layers of honesty, right? And humility. And if we flip the page, mic drop, this will establish and maintain a new order of things. But these are essential requirements. These are our spiritual principles, right? God come first, willingness, honesty, humility is enough and are essential requirements for our recovery. If I've gone on long enough, I just want to thank you for allowing me to share. And I hope I was of use to you, Cindy and Andy, for having me here today. And I'm grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Gretchen.